This is LI in the AM with Jay Oliver. News, traffic, weather, and more. 1039 LI News Radio.
Time to delve into the sports scene. Last weekend, I consider the best weekend of the year in the world of sports. So much going on, including the Masters. And the master of the sports garden himself, Mr. Tom Barton, joins us right here on our morning show. Thomas, how are you?
I'm good. I'm very good. Thanks for having me.
Tom, of course, Sports Garden 5 to 6, Monday through Friday right here on 103.9. Tom, you know, I had a lot of time to kind of evaluate and ponder, and yes, it was a wonderful scene in Augusta on Sunday as far as the comeback of the year, maybe of the decade, maybe the best I've ever seen. Individually, though, I don't think it's the greatest sports comeback I have ever seen if you throw in team orientation and everything else. But Tiger's victory certainly was one for the ages, no?
Yeah, it absolutely was. Look, I'm not no Tiger fan here, okay? But it certainly was. The problem that I have with the comeback of all time is people just have very short memories. We live in a social media world right now where if it didn't happen in the last 5 seconds, then it just didn't happen. I heard people saying, greatest comeback in the history of sports. It's not the greatest comeback even in the history of golf. If you go back to the 30s, I know we weren't alive, but Ben Hogan was told after a car accident, they had to cut off his arteries, and he would never walk again. Years later, he came back, and he won more majors. He was that good. So let's not kind of live in the bubble. And a lot of Tiger Woods' problems or the comeback that it came from, a lot of it's self-inflicted. So I don't know. You know, I have a problem with self-inflicting wounds, all of a sudden getting, you know, oh, wow, he came back from so much adversity. Look, was Tiger injured? Yeah. Was he not able to even sit in a golf cart because it hurt his back so much to ride in the golf cart? Absolutely. And it's a great story, but it's certainly a little overblown. I saw grown men crying because Tiger won. Can we get a grip, guys? Seriously.
For you golf aficionados out there, you go back to 1999, the British Open, one might remember a guy by the name of Paul Lawrie. Tom, he was 10 strokes behind final round going into that Sunday. So, you know what? You can make the case Lawrie's effort from an individual standpoint might have been the greatest golf comeback ever. I mean, can you imagine being 10 strokes behind in the final day? Unconscionable.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought that up. That's the one of the things. Tiger didn't kind of face adversity that day. He faced Molinari, who put in the drink twice. One of them was hitting a pine cone to do it. Brooks Koepka missed two putts, or that would have been a different kind of game. Other guys made mistakes. Tiger wasn't even vintage Tiger. Now, that's not taking anything away from him. He's almost like a 25-year-old that has a 100-mile-per-hour fastball, but is now 35-year-old and just hits his spot. He played really smart golf on Sunday. He was intelligent. One from the shoulders up. It's all a very good story, but hearing the overwhelming you go over the top where greatest comeback in the history of sports, and I usually agree with a lot of things that Trump does, but now he's giving them a Medal of Freedom. I mean, I think we got to calm down.
Listen, he's got to be playing with somebody in years to come or at his golf course. I mean, why not give him a Medal of Freedom? But, you know, let's face it. Why don't we just call it the feel-good story of the week with Tiger Woods? And let's face it, you're right, self-destruction all over the place. Molinari, listen, if Brooks Koepka makes that putt on 18, that makes it somewhat interesting. You know, everything kind of just fell right for the guy. And let's face it, Tom, he was laser focused. He hit key shots and everything else, and he made it all come together. He had a lot of help, though.
Yeah, he did. I'll tell you what, though, the big winner, while we all enjoyed it and everything else, the big winner was, how about the guy that put $85,000? He was $25,000 in debt, Jay, just a couple months ago. He said he had an epiphany, went down to Las Vegas, tried to book his action in two different sports books that turned away, had $85,000 in an Uber, in a shared Uber in a backpack, put it on Tiger Woods, won $1.12 million on an $85,000 bet.
No question. I mean, that was unbelievable when hearing of that. And by the way, two more things. You know, guys in their 40s can't really win and whatnot in the world of golf. Jack Nicklaus, 46, Tom, was it, in 86, taking it all. I look at it like this. I say you can win. All you have to do is stay somewhat focused, be a good putter, hit some shots down the middle, get on the fairway, and you got a shot. I mean, no pun intended. You got a chance of winning anything in golf.
Well, look, I sat down on my show, at Sports Garden, at 5 to 6 every day. I sat down last week, and I went over the odds. And I actually took Brooks Koepka to win at 25-1 odds. But I worried out loud about Tiger Woods being able to sustain physically 4 days. I worried about Phil. I think Phil and Tiger could still take on anyone. Listen, I know it's a cliche, but 43 is not what 43 used to be, right? But these guys are banged up, and they are really hurting at times. But when they're doing well, hey, you got some days that you're just feeling good. The question was, could he do it for 4 straight days? You're right. 43 is not what it once was. You could still win at 43. And I think Tiger will win again. But starting to read, he's going to, you know, absolutely break the record. I read, in a prominent newspaper that 25 is in sight. Again, once again, let's all calm down. The guy had won one. It was, of course, specifically designed for him. Everything fell into place. Good, like you said, feel-good story. But he's got a lot more competition now than when he was around the first time as well.
I fall into the Dustin Johnson trap all the time. 12 under, he finished. I kind of question his moxie to kind of put the final nail in a coffin, so to speak. But I kind of fall into the DJ trap a lot. Two things, though, as far as comebacks. You know, Tom, I still say the Red Sox comeback in, what, 04 over the Yankees after trailing 3-0, winning it. You know what? To me, that is one of the greatest comebacks I've ever seen, team-oriented. And then, you know, you go back to the mid-90s. What was it, 92, 93? I remember it like it was yesterday when Buffalo was trailing 27-3 to those Houston Oilers and came back in that second half winning that game. I'll tell you, that was incredible. Those are two biggies right there as far as comebacks.
Yeah, absolutely. What about the comeback that nobody seems to be mentioning? I've heard a lot of people bring it up. You bring up two great examples. How about George Foreman? George Foreman seemingly went away, just disappeared for decades, came back, and all of a sudden won the championship. You know, that was an interesting one as well. Again, what did he come back from? He just kind of retired and went away. But to come back at his age and win the heavyweight belt, that was a comeback that people just seemingly are forgetting as well.
Tom Barton with us, Sports Garden 5 to 6, Monday through Friday, LI News Radio. Tom, little news and notes in and around the world of sports. Always fun. Yanks, Red Sox, first two at the stadium. Yanks 5-9, Red Sox, what, 6-11, I think? They trail Tampa. No surprise there for me. They got pitching and defense. Cause for concern, Yankee fans, 12 on the shelf, 12 guys. A lot of people say, Aaron Boone this, Aaron Boone that, but come on. I mean, the team, only a third of their team is missing.
Well, not only is a third of their team missing, how about their team just not performing? James Paxton hasn't performed well. Tanaka got banged around the other night. The bullpen has looked bad. Zach Britton has been a gas can. Greg Bird, you got one hit and one RBI out of him, and it both came on opening day. Luke Voit doesn't even look that good. Look, this team is just in shambles right now. The only thing I will say for the Yankee fans, guys, the Red Sox are in shambles as well, right? So you might be chasing Tampa, but I don't think Yankee fans are scared of chasing Tampa. If you have to, kind of hang with them and you're down 6-7 games, okay. I always say when you get to double digits and you get to the second month, so you don't want to be down 10, 11, 12 games going into May. Can you make it up? Yeah, but that's what you don't want to do. This series is actually pretty important because the Red Sox are scuffling big time. Yankees are scuffling big time. If somebody gets swept, and I'm not pointing at they will, but if somebody gets swept in this series, all of a sudden that is massive. That could be big. The second thing about the Yankees to worry about, this is supposed to be the easy part of their schedule, Jay. You got the White Sox, you got the Tigers, you got the Orioles. The Yankees should be cleaning up. So, yes, they're injured. Yes, they're having problems. But you think they'd have enough to beat these teams, and they just haven't.
Listen, I hear you. I can't go crazy yet on April 16th with 148 to play. I can't. You know what? Yeah, good games, interesting games early on. Listen, Tampa's not going to keep up this pace. I got confidence. Once the Yanks get the troops back, they'll be in fine shape. As far as the Mets, no surprise here. Leading the division by a half a game. I said the Mets would be good. A lot of people did not agree with me. If they stay healthy as far as the pitching front, although I'm not big on Jason Vargas, I think he should be out of the rotation at this point in time. To me, that's an automatic loss. I like the Mets' demeanor. I like the mix of kids and veterans. I like this kid Alonso Cano with a big hit last night. I think the Mets are going to be solid.
I picked the Mets to finish in fourth place, and I'm not moving it at all. Look, the Mets look good right now, but there are underlying problems. One of the things I made a point to tell everybody is that Robinson Cano was just not going to be Robinson Cano. He has looked absolutely atrocious out there. You said a big hit last night. That's his first one since opening day. That was a big hit. He has been masked because the team has looked so good. He's batting about 140. He's looked terrible. Mets can't win without him looking good. And right now, the Mets are completely healthy. But what have we seen in the last two starts? Jacob DeGrom really looked very human. Noah Syndergaard this year hasn't picked it up, looked bad again last night. The New York Mets have to live and die by their starting pitching being absolutely crisp. You could get by here and there. Mets are scoring more than six runs. You could get by here and there for a while, maybe a month of your offense being hot. But you can't expect this offense to keep up this pace. You can't expect this offense to continue to keep going the way that they are. They've got to get their pitching right. That means middle relief. That means you got to get better pitching performances from guys like Syndergaard. If Syndergaard's your number two and you want him to, you know, be this ridiculous number two that nobody can compete against, you got to have better than a 5 ERA. You know, I'm not worried about DeGrom. But if you're looking at DeGrom to be the absolute shutdown closer, you know, this guy closes the door and you don't have to worry about it. Just go. He's not going to do what he did last year, but having two bad starts and giving up 8 runs in his last two starts, that's not going to get it done when push comes to shove. You're in a tough division. Do I still think that the Mets can win it? Yeah, absolutely. If everybody stays healthy and people turn it around. But there are some underlying worry things. Robinson Cano being the number one worry for me.
Yeah, I just think the pitching staff staying healthy is key, and Edwin Diaz certainly showed last night a little moxie, striking out there, getting a 3, 4, and 5 out in that ninth inning. Huge. Let's go to a little NBA. If you are a Warriors fan, are you concerned, or is this another little blip on the old screen, taking the foot off the pedal? But I think when you allow a L.A. Clipper team to come back from 31 down, I mean, you know what? To me, that's a little bit of a flag.
I'm stunned. I'm speechless. Look, I set the over-under myself at the Warriors not losing more than 5 games this entire season. You know, postseason, the Warriors are a team that when they want to, they're going to win. And maybe this is a wake-up call that they needed. But remember, Cousins left. Now, I know they built the lead without him, but Cousins left. That's a big blow to this team. He's probably not coming back. If you looked at the injury, he's probably not coming back for the series. Now, they have plenty to still win. They'll be fine against the Clippers. They'll probably be fine the entire postseason. But it changes the team dynamic. I think we're all going to know everything we need to know about this Warriors team. Thursday night, they go on the road against the Clippers. They need to absolutely squash this L.A. team. And if they do that, we go, okay, blip on the radar, no big deal. If they win, but it's close, and the Clippers can hang in there, all of a sudden you go, okay, I'm a little concerned. I don't expect that. I think this is their one loss here, their one hiccup kind of game, and you're going to be able to move forward. The Warriors are just that good. I'm stunned at what happened last night.
What about the Nets? You know, I had a real good chance to watch them in length last night. I love what Kenny Atkinson has done with his team. And I'll tell you one thing. I think this Sixer team is more talented than anyone. I just think they're poorly coached. Brett Brown, I just don't think does the job for them as far as motivation. Case in point with Joel Embiid the other night on a cell phone. I don't know what that was all about during the game. Quite frankly, 51-23 third quarter obviously did the Nets in, but they stayed close first half, came back. I think the Nets are impressive. We'll see a very important game as we head back to Brooklyn.
Yeah, you know, listen, I like the Nets. I bet on them in the preseason to make the playoffs, and I wrote it, man. I am a big fan of this Nets team. I didn't think they'd have enough to get by Philly, but I may have underestimated Philly's dysfunction, and that's the best word I could come up for Philadelphia. They are a dysfunctional team. Ben Simmons cannot hit a jump shot. Joel Embiid is out there. Maybe he's hurt, maybe he's not. Then he says afterwards, I was never hurt. We don't know what's going on there. They are bad, poorly coached. They're a bad group, too. You ask yourself, who's the guy that's getting the ball at the end? Ben Simmons wants to be the guy. Joel Embiid wants to be the guy. Butler wants to be the guy. And Philly doesn't know who the guy is. Can they get by the Nets on pure talent? Yeah, we watched it last night, right? I mean, they could get by the Nets. The Nets are a fun team. They're just not that talented of a team. They're disciplined. They don't miss foul shots, things of that nature. Philadelphia in game one missed 22 of 25 three-pointers. That was ridiculous. This is a Philly team that they could get by the Nets on pure talent. You're not getting by Boston and Toronto, and Milwaukee on pure talent. So it's going to be a short-lived experiment here with the process at Philadelphia. I expect this team to not only lose, but also to get broken up, Jay. I don't think Butler stays on this dysfunctional kind of team. You mentioned the cell phone. One of the most ridiculous things I've seen in sports in a long time was that cell phone situation.
No question. Quick ones here. How about the Islanders? I don't see comparisons to the old Stanley Cup years outside of the coach, maybe a little Trotz and Arbor. You want to tell me Torrey and Lamoriello? Okay. Different team, though. Different makeup. There's no Bossy with Tavares out. There's no Trottier. There's no Billy Smith. I mean, let's face it. They are their own identity, this team. I love what I'm seeing here. They're scrappers. There's no enforcer a la Bobby Nystrom. And there's no Clark Gillies on this team. But I tell you, they all play in unison. That's what I see on this Islander team.
Yeah, look, it's defense, defense, and defense. And what they've done against Pittsburgh is massively remarkable. And how about the rest of the field kind of being cleared out? Look, Columbus looks like they're going to take out Tampa Bay. Can the Islanders beat Columbus? Yeah, sure they can. And then you have Washington, which you look at the Islanders against Washington, that matchup, that's a good matchup for the Islanders. I'm not telling you that they will continue to move on, but let's just bask in what has happened this series. It is defense. It is gritty. It's grinding. Where I think the Islanders are lacking, and if they do get knocked out in this playoffs or when they do get knocked out in those playoffs, what will it be? It will be kind of the same thing I just said about Philadelphia. Who's the guy that you're giving the puck to win a game when it comes down to late? And I know Islander fans are going to defend it and say, well, we have a bunch of guys that play that role. You do, but it helps to have the one guy. It helps to have one guy to step it up. I think Bailey is very clutch, but Eberle has looked good. They are a team that is playing as a team. Playing as a team is a really good notion for most of the time. But you know who Washington's taking that last shot, right? Ovechkin's the best player on the ice. Even in Pittsburgh, you know Crosby's the best player on the ice. The Islanders have the best team right now, but not the best player on the ice. I think he could only take you so far.
Last one. My head says Zion. My heart says Ja, upcoming NBA draft. If you're the Knicks, who's your top pick there, Tom Barton?
I think you have to go Zion. Whether you said it, heart against head, whether you believe that he's the top pick or not, you have to go Zion. Just because of what has happened, the groundswell that's been there for Zion Williams. He's a guy that seems like a very high floor, so he's not going to just completely fizzle out. But he's a player unto himself. He's more than just a player. He's going to bring attention. He's going to bring the people in the stands, the fervor that you want. He's going to bring a lot more than just actual on-the-court play. I think Ja is probably a better fit for the Knicks, especially if they go out there and get Durant. But Zion is a guy that you almost have to take. He forces your hand there. He's so much so that Zion Williams is about a 50-1 favorite that he's going to be the number one overall pick because you almost have to take him. It might actually be better for the New York Knicks to get the number two seed because Ja is a better. He's just a better player and a better fit if they go out and get Durant. Having Durant and Zion is almost repetitive. So I think the Knicks wind up with Zion. I think he'll be fine. I don't think it's a situation where you go, oh, my God, could you imagine? But if the Knicks didn't take Zion, they took Ja, we could be looking back in 10 years and going, that was the biggest mistake in the history of the NBA making picks. I think Zion has that kind of upside, that kind of ability to be that good.
I have to agree with you, I think, Tom. Listen to Tom Barton every night, Monday to Friday, 5 to 6 on the Great Sports Garden Show. Mr. Barton, always a pleasure.
All right, thank you.